It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we are very happy to have special guest Charlotte White with us, who served a little bit of time as a political campaign manager. She has some time being an actress, and I think it's going to be a pretty interesting story for us to share. So Charlotte, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So maybe just to get us started, if you could just tell us a little bit of background about, I guess, where you're from and what makes you you.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from Findlay. I grew up here for most of my life, and then, well, until I was six. And then I moved out to Los Angeles with my mom, and we spent about 10 years out in Los Angeles, and I pursued acting and did a whole bunch of that stuff, and then we moved back right after the 2016 election.
All right. What was your experience like in Hollywood?
Oh, gosh. That's a loaded question.
Is it all everything everybody makes it out to be, or
when I was out there, I was so young. I didn't know anything. I didn't have any idea. But the older I got, the more I started to kind of see how the industry worked and how manipulative. And I'm still an actress, and I'm saying this, so that's probably going to come back and bite me in the butt. But it's changed a lot since I was first out there.
Yeah, for the better or for the worse?
I would say for the worse. Yeah. They got a big agenda that they're pushing, and it's hard for me as a young white Christian female to get
anything. You just said all the buzz points.
I said all of the terrible words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't say conservative, so that's better, right?
Well, I should probably add that on there too. So yeah, I'm basically the opposite of everything that they want.
Right.
So, but
that means you kind of get shelved then?
I would say so. A little bit more than
like
some people.
They call you when they're desperate for something.
I don't even get calls when they're desperate. I mean, yeah, it's really... the pendulum was one way for so long, and I feel like they're just really trying to overcorrect it. Mm. So it's swinging so far left that it's virtually impossible for anyone with any strong opinions that are not aligning with theirs to be on.
So do you think that's why a lot of artists who started out in church, who are big hits now, but they're also way left?
Yeah.
Is that part of the shift that they reward those who drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, go Jim Jones on us.
Yeah, yeah.
And the ones that don't kind of get shelved.
I think it has a lot to do with that. I really do. When you're out there for so long, you kind of start to see the glitz and the glamour that they all talk about, which is very dark energy. It's this very dark, evil kind of thing. So you get sucked in.
When you say that, though, it's overt. Maybe it's not as obvious to everybody.
It's not. It's not, because once you're in it more, you see the game that you have to play in order to get to where you want to be.
So kind of got to go along to get along.
Exactly. It's literally the term. You have to sell your soul in order to. I mean, you know, you have these big A-list celebrities and big people like Katy Perry. She's a fantastic example.
I was going to bring her up.
Yeah, she's a great example.
I tried not to name drop.
I really was, because
you guys are like, you're thinking about. Like, yeah,
sorry, no, sorry, Katy.
I was going to bring her up because she talks about how she originally wanted to be like Amy Grant.
Yeah,
and just she wasn't making any headway.
Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have so many people. Yeah. That,
Amy Grant herself, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they grew up. This is big conservative grow up, and then you get out there, you see the money, you see what it gets you, and then boom, that's it.
Now, how many people did you see when you were out there? You said you went with your mom.
So yeah.
I'm assuming that obviously had to be a huge benefit for you to have somebody that actually loves and cares about you in your corner, that's not, in essence, trying to sell you to live out her dream, per se.
Yeah.
How many kids did you see with a differing experience from that were just, their parents did want to live their dreams through them, or they didn't even have anybody there to advocate for them in the first place?
So many kids. So many. A lot of the kids' careers out there were driven by their parents. Mm. So the parents would make the decisions. They would be the sole executor of everything. You could really see how that changes a lot of kids' lives. That's why these kids' stars have such a big problem whenever they get older.
Yeah,
it almost seems like the kid's just a product.
Yeah. Sometimes they really are. Like, there are some people now that are pretty famous that I used to know when we were all running around and, you know, being kids back then. And they've changed completely. Mm. It's crazy to see that. Yeah.
It's almost depriving of a childhood.
It is, because I feel like, in a sense, I didn't get a lot of the normal childhood experiences that a lot of people did. You know, I didn't go to school. I didn't do any extracurriculars. I didn't have, you know, those types of friends that you would have in school. And so my experience was very different from a lot of kids.
I'd say you turned out all right.
How old are you?
I'm 22.
22. I would say, but you're well-spoken.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're confident. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Was that
Jesus.
Parents?
Okay. No, my identity, my mom and dad were very conservative. And so my dad was actually the chairman of the Hancock County Republican Party for quite some time. So I have very deep conservative roots with both my mom and dad.
What all did you work on when you were out there? Anything?
The biggest thing was Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
I did an episode of Grey's Anatomy, Longmire, which was fantastic. That was my favorite set that I was on. And just a couple shorts and did an episode of Private Practice, but nothing like
big that
nothing
you were always,
huge. Yeah, no, nothing like that.
It was like a one-time in, or were you like a consistent character in those shows? Or
I was just a guest star.
Okay.
So I was just on for like a few scenes.
So those are where you get noticed and maybe you start to pick up things.
Obviously that didn't happen for a reason, I would imagine, but my mom was out there with me. I did have an agent and a manager when I was out in LA, and they got me auditions and she'd drive me all across the place.
You're literally dodging a minefield the whole time you're out there, but you don't even know it.
No. No, my mom knew, though.
Right.
I mean, I've had conversations with her about this, and she was like...
Wow.
It was crazy. I remember the first apartment complex that we lived in. I was like 7, and it was my first encounter with marijuana. I was 7 years old, and people were just...
Token it up.
Yeah, they were. Big time. Lots of Mary Jane out there.
Jeez.
So. To me, it seems almost like the way you describe it. It's like you're in a group of people and someone tells a joke and there's those who pick up on it and get it and there's those who don't.
Yeah.
And so in other words, unless you're laughing, you're not in the group.
Exactly.
As long as you go with it, and those who don't, you're left behind.
Yeah, pretty much. That's LA.
So would you say it's kind of an experience of, I guess, kind of through my research I've done into this subject, you see a lot of celebrities who have kind of spoken on, you know, you can only get to, let's just say, metaphorically speaking, you can get to this door if you do this, but if you want to advance further than that, you're going to have to do these certain things that I would say most people would find to be a moral compromise.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of moral compromise out there.
So do you think it's a fully demonic, or do you think it's these people who are in control that want to run their good old club with aspects of, if we can get you to do anything for money, we know that we entirely control you?
I think it's a little bit of both. I really do. I think that you can see a lot of darkness in some of the stuff that you watch. You know, there's a lot of compromise. There's a lot of sex for shows and stuff now. So it's like, and you know, even if you watch Disney, it's like, I don't even think I want my kids to watch Disney anymore, you know?
A lot of dudes wearing dresses.
Yeah, like, I don't know what the heck that's about. But, you know, 20 years ago, that would have been completely unthinkable. Mm-hmm. And now we're at a point where we're like, yeah, that's a new normal. So
everybody does.
I know. It's crazy.
I think for most Americans, this is so far beyond what they think how things work.
Yeah.
But in their mind, they're just consumers watching an entertainment program, right?
Yeah.
But they have no idea. Like, for example, there's historical documents on this. The CIA, other three-letter organizations were actually feeding Hollywood scripts and things they wanted put out there to leave impressions upon people towards certain persuasions and mindsets that would make them favorable towards certain things or to dislike certain things.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize, whether you're talking about Hollywood or the news or the music industry, the movies, all these things, they're being fed stuff. There is an agenda. And it very much reminds me of these groups that we hear about, of what we call secret organizations that have hidden agendas that they are actually executing. And really the reason why they're so secretive, even with the people they bring in who get the joke, who get to laugh and be a part of it, is these people are agreeing to go along with the agenda in exchange for the currency they get, right? But regardless, they're in the secret club.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what you probably pick up on that is so evil, because it's not just
programming, right?
Well,
who's
being programmed, the TV or you, right?
Yeah, literally. Well, yeah. Right.
But it is. It's these things that you don't want to think about, because you just want to say, I just want to, we call it unplug. So detached from thinking, frontal lobe detached, and just tune out to whatever they're giving me. And again, as you just said, Tyler, now you're being programmed.
Yeah. Mm. I think as people were so susceptible sometimes, we're so impressionable, especially young kids, that anything that you put on, even if you're just scrolling on your phone, I mean, can't you just sit there for hours and just like scroll through Facebook or Instagram or TikTok
through
whatever?
The Reels and Shorts.
Exactly.
But there's an algorithm feeding you.
Exactly. So you're sucked in. You can't escape it, you know? So, right. I mean, it's everywhere.
It's honestly amazing, too, how good the algorithms have gotten in terms of if you're in more of a laughy, funny mood, it kind of just like adapts to that. Or if you're into more of a learning, researchy mood, it kind of shows you content as such. Like, it's very, very sharp.
I think it would freak people out to know that they're not just feeding you stuff based on your search history, but they're looking at your face through your own camera.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It freaks me out all the time. I think about that all the time. I'm like, that's why I cover my laptop camera. I'm like, I don't want anyone watching me.
It's like, why does your app need to have access to your camera when it's not even a picture app?
Exactly.
You know, it's not even supposed to use that or your contacts.
What are you doing? Yeah, you know, exactly. Like, what are you looking at?
I don't know who first said it, but it's true.
All-seeing eye.
Yeah.
Anytime you are given something free, you are the product.
Yes.
These free apps are not free. They're selling you.
Yeah. Exactly.
What brought you back? Did you just have enough and kind of you were good with your experience there? Or?
Well, I think my mom did. But she was like, I'm out of here.
This place is crazy.
Yeah. Well, actually, they were selling the condo that we were living in, and my grandma was having some health issues at the time, and we're like, you know what, we might as well just go home. So we just picked up and left. And
so, how'd you get into politics?
Well, a lot of that was because of my dad, because he was chairman here for so long. And then it was during the 2016 election. I had so many heated conversations with my crazy liberal friends out there about Hillary and about Trump and all this stuff. And I wasn't old enough to vote, but I had an opinion. That election kind of really spurred me on. You know, I mean, this is our country. I'm the future. My generation and younger were the future. And I wanted to get active. Yeah. I wanted to get active. Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's really scary if you look at it now. It's like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen?
That's what I always tell Tyler.
Yeah. 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 During the 2020 election, I helped out for Trump's campaign. And that obviously didn't go too well for him. So I kind of took a little bit of a step back, and then Ty reached out to me this past year, well, last year, and he was like, yeah, you want to come on board? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. Bring me on. So yeah, that kind of started some stuff.
Baptism of fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
So you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience.
What was probably the biggest surprise for you?
How disgusting politics can be. Mm. I mean, we all knew it was bad,
right, you know,
but I didn't even understand how bad it could be at a small local level.
It's probably got its own joke, right?
Yeah.
Same thing all over
again.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It's like you look at it on a federal level and you're like, man, this is crazy. These people are nuts. But you don't realize how awful it is even in your own little town.
All that crazy actually starts in your community.
Exactly.
There's probably a lot of teeth behind the smiles.
Oh, there's so much. There's so much. And I think that was my biggest surprise, just knowing how dirty it can get, even between Republicans.
You've been exposed to a lot.
Yeah.
And you're still positive.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, what's the point of being negative? I mean, yeah, you've seen a lot of stuff, but my eternal long view is what keeps me going.
Okay.
So
there's your hope.
Yeah.
I like that.
Back to faith.
Yeah. No, it's always, mm-hmm. It's always back to my faith.
Now in 2016, I kind of feel like we have similar experiences here, but I'm guessing were the majority of your friends more center left?
Yeah.
More, we can't have, you know, just go along with whatever the popular narrative and opinion is.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the same experience.
Well, in their defense, Tyler, I mean, their Hollywood actors are all lefties, and the bands they listen to are all lefties, and
their parents are also all lefties.
It's cool to be lefty because you get to laugh at the joke.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I kind of.
It's so true.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it was kind of me in some ways, very much, and then I feel like kind of how you felt when you're like, man, this is our country. We gotta. got to actually do something about this. Yeah. This is going to be full-blown taken over. And I guess for myself anyways, you kind of experience those periods of almost feeling like isolated, like you're alone and like, you know, your friends don't think the same way as you. And you kind of battle back and forth with them trying to like, man, you got to see this or we're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
And you say we're going to be, but at some point, don't you say like we are in big trouble?
Like, I mean, at this point, yes, but I'm talking and like in my experience of getting to this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your outlook for the future? How are you hopeful? Are you cautiously optimistic? Are you
good question?
That is a really good question. If you ask me that right now, which did I would say I'm cautiously not optimistic with the way things are going. But I think a lot of that is you have to empower the young people that are really willing to step up and fight. And I think as young conservatives, we feel we have no voice because we're going to get shut down by the really loud liberals. Because that's all they do. They shout, they scream, they yell. And I think my goal, if I was to do something huge, is I would want to empower those young people with their voices and say, hey, listen, like we need to step up. This is our country. This is our future. And if we don't fight for it, we're going to lose it.
Okay. This isn't just an ideal for you. You just opened and said, I'm probably going to get dinged for that. And you're putting it... your money where your mouth is, right? Like you're risking by saying all these things. What I want our audience to understand is this comes at personal risk to you.
Oh yeah.
We must weigh the cost and walk through it.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think that's where most of us get stuck.
Yeah.
We go, I don't want to suffer even for doing good. And that's why we've gotten in this position is because good people won't suffer.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. And I think a lot of it too, especially for, it seems like for people in my age, a lot of it is just complacency. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us aren't educated. We don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's our job, the people that are invested, we take our time and we properly educate the people that actually want to know. Because there are a lot of people out there that really want to listen. But you have to take the time. Right. And you have to find those people and instead of having arguments all the time, because that seems... that's what 99% of political conversations result in.
Right. Do you think not having a, I guess what most would call a conventional education has actually served you great benefit?
I do.
I do too.
I really do. I thank my mom every day, even though I know I was a big pain in the butt. I thank her every day for homeschooling me because being
out. You're the product of homeschool, not the state run.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. My dad would have thrown a huge fit if I would have been put in a public school out in LA. I mean, the public school system out, can you imagine how awful that would have been?
You'd been poisoned.
Oh yeah. I would have been done. I really would have been. Wow. And I'm really grateful because my mom gave me the liberty to think. And she gave me the freedom to talk about these things. And
so you could question whatever safely.
Right.
And then be able to land based on informed.
Exactly. Well, she also took a lot of the curriculum herself and said, well, that's not true. So, so awesome. A lot of that was also from her. So but
that's something you talked about is about educating young people, right? Yeah. It's not just enough about having a voice. It's having an informed voice.
Exactly.
And that's, again, one of the issues that we're running into. Is that, again, now we're not just talking Hollywood, we're talking our entire school system. Wait, it's all tied together.
Absolutely.
All of this is on one big teachers agenda.
Union. Yeah, absolutely.
And so they're persuading a generation to think a certain way and not another.
Yeah.
And so you're already preconditioned to not only believe a certain way, but to go home and hear it again when you unplug the TV. Or listen to your favorite band or
all repetitive.
I think you nailed it when you just said you were given the liberty and taught how to think, not what to think, but how to think. So if you have the ability to process, you know, logic and rhetoric and appropriately display them, you can really accomplish just about anything, right? I mean, if you have a good basic understanding and you know how to think about things, you can process and then you come to the best conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you can. And I think we should start doing that more.
Assuming you're going to have kids.
Yes.
What will you do differently than most American families today?
Well, first of all, I'm going to start with faith in the home. because that is a big foundation in my life. And I feel like a lot of young kids, if you're just looking at it nationally, they don't have the foundation of faith. They do not know who Jesus is. And so I want to take my kids to church. I want them to learn about Jesus. And when they get old enough, I want to give them the ability to think for themselves. So I don't want to send them to public school. I would so much rather, depending upon the private school, I would so much rather send them to private school or stay at home and do it myself. Because I'd hate to have my kids fed into the system.
You'd be willing to give up your career to raise the next generation.
If that is the calling that God has for me, yes.
You know what I think is awesome about you and Ty both is nowadays, obviously, with political rhetoric, I think you find many people who maybe find a specific district, and whatever that district maybe is more in favor of, you find a well-spoken politician who's able to kind of convey those political points just to get elected, right? They're probably not really necessarily entirely about those points, but they'll say what they need to say to keep it rolling. What's really cool about the both of you, though, is getting to meet you separately and that you both have such similar ideologies.
It's refreshing.
Which
I think
is, yeah, yes, it is. Which is
it's really cool to like, I mean, it's like you guys don't just have the general faith speak like, oh, I just thank God.
You know what it is?
You're not Mike Johnson. Let's say
what it is with this is that, you know, I'm at a place where I'm halfway in the grave and I'm going, okay, man, I wish 30 years ago I knew then what I know now. And we see you guys and go, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. There's hope. What's the saying? Help me, Tyler. It's the faithful men. It's the good men. Who plant trees for the shade that they will never enjoy.
They'll never receive.
It's like that's. And I'm almost in that category. Going okay. I'm planting these trees for the next generation, and it's like oh gosh, and someone's going to get to enjoy it.
Well, that's the amazing thing about what you guys do is that I don't want you to feel uncredited because you are giving us the shade. You are. You're helping us to be able to go forward and go into this crazy, ridiculous world that we live in with empowerment and with a good foundation, which a lot of people don't do that anymore. So that small sacrifice that you guys might see is huge for so many of us. So thank you.
Well, it used to be the greatest generation. This was the norm, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, where did we go? Like, what happened?
That is such a good question. I don't know. I ponder that all the time.
I remember, who was that person that was, I can't remember the artist. It's way back from my day, but Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? And it's an older song, but that was one of the questions was, where's all the good men?
Yeah.
In comparison to where I grew up, it was when you saw somebody in need, an old lady struggling up the steps with her groceries, somebody would stop and help. Today, maybe. But probably not.
Maybe he's probably pushing it.
Or even a homeless person.
Right.
You're not going to take them anything. Prime example, out in LA, so many homeless people everywhere. I don't think I saw a single time anyone help them.
Stop
ever.
And help. Yeah.
Which I know a lot of them are
panhandlers.
Mentally ill.
It's just they're professional panhandlers.
They
right?
do have some mental disabilities, and I understand that, but that's a sacrifice that you have to take.
Well, and you would think, you know, living in a town full of multi-millionaires that somebody could probably
one would think that's a very noble idea, but
well, I just heard there's a banquet for Hollywood that my brother was just telling me about. It was $75,000 just to get in, and if you wanted to sit at the table, it was $300,000.
Oh my god!
Oh, you weren't there. It was a good time.
Well, yeah, some of the great YouTube people.
Well, I'm really
I guess,
glad that you were there.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Those YouTube influencers, they paid to just get in, but if you wanted to be able to sit down, you had to pay $300,000, and it's like. And I guess there's this big uproar they're saying is, and what you just said, there's all these people who are starving to death or addicts who are using whatever money they have to buy their drugs, but people need help.
They do.
You're so selfish. While you say we should tax the rich, you are the rich.
Yeah, literally.
All these things that you want to take from the rest of, basically it's middle class.
Yeah.
You want to take from them while you're dropping for one meal, $75,000 to $300,000 on a meal.
I hope that was a really good meal. Because if it's not, that would be really disappointing.
Well, the company stunk, let me tell you.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But that's so true. They don't. I mean, out in LA, they have a place called Skid Row. So it's all of the homeless people. Do you want to know how they help people in Skid Row? They staple Narcan to the trees.
And they give them free needles.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, oh, that's really helpful. Yeah, you're just encouraging them to not want to get better. I mean, that's great.
What yeah, you're really doing up. Is you're appeasing your conscience while you're giving them the poison,
yeah,
the exactly. means to kill themselves.
Exactly. It's awful to see that. It's awful. Mm. And when we were out there, Skid Row was just like a little small thing on the map. I mean, it is moved.
It's broadened quite a bit, right?
Quite a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, even in, I mean, you've got San Francisco, you see stories of people pooping in the streets. I mean,
yeah.
It's a total free-for-all.
It's disgusting. My boyfriend told me the other day, he's like, I really want to go to San Francisco. I want to see Alcatraz. And I'm like, you really want to go to San Francisco? Have fun. Yeah.
So put this in a positive place for us, or negative, whichever one it is. You're looking to the future. You're going to do some things different. You're going to homeschool. You've got a voice now. You got a platform, a chance to say something. What else do you want to do differently that you think will help reshape America to bring us to a place of, you know, if you want to say the glory days,
yeah.
How do we get back there? The place of prosperity, the place where, well, for example, I'll say the thing that I believe united America in our founding that made us the beacon of light that we are is the church. Those early settlers came over and what they had in common was Christ.
Yep.
We have many today trying to deny that reality, but it's inescapable if you're going to be accurate with history. What else can we do?
Education is so important. It is so important. I mean, I'm not saying you need a college degree to do everything, because you don't. I mean, if you're going to be a doctor, absolutely. But you don't need, I don't have a college degree. But I think if you actually are patient and you take the time to sit down with these young people and you teach them this, not this crazy radicalized history books, none of this stuff. You sit them down and you go, this is how it is. You know, we need to get back to home economics. It'd be great if we actually taught taxes in school. Mm-hmm. Like everyone would be a conservative.
How to manage money.
Yeah. I mean, all of these things, they're so important, and we don't have any of that. You have kids that are going to school and they're learning, you know, the Pythagorean theorem. Okay. When are you going to use that? I've never used the Pythagorean theorem once in my life.
Right.
So, I mean, the education system, as flawed as it is, it's so important that we properly educate our kids. And then we do bring faith back into the table, because there are so many religions now. People are like, you know, religions, but people, they worship so many gods, they worship themselves. And take your kids to church.
Yeah.
You know, sit down with them, read the Bible. I mean, those are essential things that we don't have anymore. And having a two-parent home, I think, is huge. I think Democrats have destroyed the idea of the traditional family, and that has royally screwed kids up.
100%.
And it's so hard, though, because in this economy, how can you not have two working parents? Mm-hmm. You can't afford to do anything. But that goes back to the middle class. Mm-hmm. They want to completely alleviate that, because we're the bread of America.
Right. Yep.
We are the thing that keeps America going.
Right.
And if they alleviate the middle class, then what do we do?
You have haves and have-nots.
Right. You have the rich, and you have the people that depend upon the government,
mm-hmm.
which is basically bringing that back to a socialist society, or a communist society, because that's
well, they're really one and the same.
Feudalism.
Yeah. I mean, they are. Yeah. Just different words, you know.
Yep. For sure.
You know what's hard about this is that the other part, and I know that we touched on it already, but it's to actually see it for what it is. We all know junk food's bad for you, right?
Yeah.
But we enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm guilty. I have a little pudge on me.
I love potato chips.
Right. We know it's awful, yet we still consume it. And I would say the same thing is true for our entertainment industry.
Yes.
We know it's poisoning us. It's poisoning our society. It's poisoning the individual.
Yeah.
But we've got to unplug.
Yeah, we do. Or it would be great if you took these amazing, like, there are some filmmakers like Antonio Sabato Jr. He started a conservative filmmaking company out of Arizona. Fantastic. The people that started The Chosen.
Yeah.
I mean, look at how refreshing that series is.
Mm-hmm.
So you need these people that are actually bold enough and brave enough to go out there and do this stuff. And then you try to change your entertainment industry.
I think there's a lot of probably people within the entertainment industry, whether it be music or acting, actresses, actors, that actually probably don't enjoy making the content that they're making.
Yeah.
I think it's just we kind of touched on this a little bit ago too. They feel, well, obviously they're getting a good paycheck, but they feel as though they have nowhere else to go. And when you're used to that, high of, let's just say, every show you're making $10,000, it's a lot easier to sit here in this chair and say, well, you should just walk away from that.
Yeah.
And you see, well, you see what happens to those who don't go with the system. Yeah. Hello, Charlotte.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Like, do you want to be out there and not work in our club?
Right. Or yeah, exactly.
Are you good where you're at?
Well, you know, I think I was listening, I was watching or looking at some Friends facts the other day. Towards the end of the series, Friends, the stars are making about $1 million each episode. So you look at that paycheck and you're like, wow, I can't walk away from that. I mean, money, wow, that's a lot of money. That could do a lot of things for you. I would love it if we could. I feel like Chris Pratt is such a great example of this too. Like, I know he's Christian. Mm-hmm. I remember one time in an interview, he said that he wouldn't do any like kissing scenes or any lovemaking scenes like that with anyone. And I think that that's awesome. Super respectful. You need more people like that.
Right.
That actually step up and challenge the industry, but he's still an A-list star.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he's...
They want to change that,
they
but
do.
He still is.
They do. He's still there. Yeah, he's still there. He's making Marvel movies. Right. You know, he's doing all of these things, and you need people like that to step up. Like Russell Brand, I mean, what a change he's made, too.
Wow.
Yeah. Huge A-list celebrity.
I'm waiting for Joe Rogan. I'm waiting. It's going to happen.
I know. It is. It is. We're going to keep praying.
He's on his journey.
Yeah, he's on the way there. But these people, I mean, I think God moves and works in incredibly beautiful, mysterious ways. And if we keep praying for them just to try to have that door opened, I think you can make a world of difference.
I think, well, I'm going to add on to that. Pray. But listen, you still got to do what Paul said in Ephesians 6.
Yep.
Stand.
Yes.
We've got to stand.
Yeah.
So kind of a pray, stand, speak, act kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, you take Joe Rogan. What's awesome about what you just said is that God moves in very mysterious and powerful ways. As Joe Rogan goes on this journey of exploration and like is kind of coming to his own awakening, look at all the people he's bringing with him.
Right.
Because yeah. all of his audience love to listen to him because he's so interesting and he has so many interesting people on his show.
Yeah.
So as he goes through this experience of awakening, I'm going to guess many of those people are probably doing the same thing.
Yeah, I would love to see that. And I hope that's actually the case.
I think kind of how you said, too, if people make these choices, I just actually watched an interview of Denzel Washington from back in the day. And he was talking about one of his first movies. He had called his agent and told him, hey, they want me to do this bit about a black guy that they can't kill, and then eventually they hang him with a rope. And he's like, I don't want to do that. And the whole audience is kind of laughing. And he kind of says, you know, his agent told him, well, you got to make a choice, because if you're willing to do it now, you're always going to be willing to do it. So you need to decide. And they basically told him, he went back in and he told the like executive producers, you know, hey guys, I don't feel comfortable doing this. You know, I know you guys think it's a funny bit, but what if I were Jewish and there was a skit where you had me come in and we were in a, you know, we were in a gas chamber and we all had gas masks on and the whole crowd went like, oh, and he's like, yeah, that wouldn't be funny, would it?
Yeah.
And then obviously they had a different viewpoint about it, but it was just amazing to see even the programming on such a level that when we hear, oh, black man, they couldn't kill, so they hung by a rope, the whole audience laughs. And the moment they said something about a Jew, the whole audience like kind of gasps, when really they're the same thing, but we're just programmed to view them differently.
Yeah.
Hate looks the same, you know.
no matter what, it's always the same.
Mm-hmm. I think absolutely in our lifetimes, we can't speak for Jeff, he's a little older than us, but in our lifetimes, I don't think we've seen society further away from God.
Oh,
and certainly,
yeah.
I mean, we know God didn't move right. It was us as a society. Right.
Yeah.
And I think Reagan said in the 80s, you know, if we have a society that removes God, you're going to see its downfall. I'm paraphrasing there, but I think you can very obviously see when God is removed, along goes decency, morality, everything that goes with God.
My generation is the perfect example of that. I mean, we are. We're so intoxicated by these ideologies of being bisexual or being transgender or there's so many freaking ideologies out there, but we're so intoxicated by that. It's alluring. It's appealing. I mean, and that's
rewarded.
Yeah.
And how much of that do you think is from people who are lost, they're wandering, and they've just never felt like they've been in the right spot. They've never felt accepted. And now this is the new mainstream narrative of acceptance of if you are this, everybody's going to love on you for it. So how many of these people that you think are making this decision are as a result of that?
I think 100% of the people that make this decision are lost. They don't know where their identity is found, and they keep looking for it in all the wrong places. I mean, people have been doing that for years. It might not be in their gender. It could be in drugs. It could be in alcohol. Sure. It could be in lustful thoughts and actions. I think a lot of the people are lost, and they don't know who to turn to find their hope, to find their identity.
When you've never been exposed to truth, any lie sounds good.
Yes.
Well, in closing, I think I just have one more question. If you, or can you think of a time in your life where maybe you were at a real crossroads, or you had come to your own realization that you had strayed from God yourself and your faith really carried you through a specific situation, or maybe a season in your life to which led you back on track?
Yes. So I always forget to include this in part of my testimony, but I think this is really what made it pivotal for me. So I was, oh gosh, maybe 19. And I had a friend at the time. She was very much into the witchy, you know, crystals, tarot cards and stuff. So being the impressionable young woman that I was like, oh, well, this looks interesting. And growing up out in LA, people were like, oh yeah, burn your incense, you know, very hippie vibes. So I was exposed to that young, but then having this friend kind of took me down that. And then I remember one day I had this like crazy spiritual encounter, and it was very dark, felt very demonic. And so I called her and I was like, dude, something's not right. I mean, you got to get over here. And
come bring your wizardry.
Yeah, right, like that was really going to help, but whatever. I didn't know what else to do at that point in time. So she came over and she's like, yeah, dude, something's really off here. And so we sat down and she was doing a bunch of her stuff. And then, I mean, I just felt like so dark. And all I remember, like when I closed my eyes, I just saw like flames. It was just bright red flames. I mean, I felt like I was in hell. It was awful.
So was it almost like an out-of-body experience for you?
Almost, yeah. Because I felt like I was there, but I wasn't. I was very detached. And then all of a sudden, it was just like this beautiful, bright light. And I couldn't see a face. But I knew it was Jesus. And I knew he was there in that moment. And he was like, you are not taking my child. And I still get goosebumps every time I tell the story. So if I choke up, I'm so sorry. But in that moment, I remember telling my friend, I was like, Jesus is here. He's here. And from that moment on, he snatched me right out of that, and he saved me, and he opened my eyes. And I mean, that moment was the most pivotal moment in my life for who I am.
So it was like an encounter for you to where you got to see both contrasts.
Yeah.
Almost like you saw hell's fire and then a glimpse of heaven's
beauty
at the same
time. Behind the veil.
I think what's really cool about spiritual testimony is until you've had one, in some ways, they can almost sound kind of out there, a little quirky, kooky. And then I think everybody kind of has that same view of like, oh, okay. And then you have your own encounter.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, man, I know it sounds crazy, but...
But like, this is how it is.
Exactly.
It
happened to
me. Yeah, yep. If I walked this up and told that story to someone on the street, they'd be like, what are you taking? Well, you know what I mean? But it's true. It happened to me, and I know if Jesus can do that for me, he can do that for anyone.
Again,
sure.
Our culture doesn't talk about this. We are absolutely physical beings, but we're also spiritual beings.
Yeah.
And we just forget that.
Yeah, God designed us that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, he created us to inhabit in him.
Yeah, so we shouldn't be surprised when spiritual things happen.
Yeah.
But we are.
Exactly. And I'm really grateful. I saw my life without Jesus, and I know my life now with Jesus. That's awesome. There's nothing that I would do to change that.
That is awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeff, why don't you pray us out?
Yeah. God, I thank you for this chance just to meet Charlotte and to have, a breath of fresh air. Her and Ty both are just such a blessing. And I thank you for the work you're doing in them individually and in our community. And I pray that you would embolden them and surround them with people that help them to accomplish the purpose you have for them. So pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here. and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. Peace, love, and God bless. Remember, the eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
It's blindly obvious, baby.